Vanessa Beasley is an associate professor and dean of Ingram Commons at Vanderbilt University. She has studied every inaugural address that's been given over the past 30 years, and in her presentation tonight, we'll compare President Trump's comments with other inaugurals that she has studied. She joins us during Sound Ideas today. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Willis. Happy to be here.
Historically, presidential inaugurals tend to be aspirational, with accomplishments cited from the past that can lead to success in the future. Where in his speech did President Trump seem aspirational to you?
The second half of the speech is where I think he was trying to be aspirational, where the team was laying out its actual specific, less policy goals. The difference, I think, when you compare Trump's speech to other inaugurals, is that it was more like a list there at the end, and with less sort of philosophical embellishment about why these goals were important and consistent with larger American values.
And typically, you never hear a lot of crunchy details in inaugural speeches. It's kind of a 10,000-foot view. Do you think Trump accomplished that in his speech?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question, because his speech really didn't have as much, to use your language, aerial coverage as it might have, as we might have imagined that it would. And in fact, that's one thing I'll be speaking about tonight. You would expect that there would be an effort to situate his administration and its vision within, as you say, a larger, big picture, kind of higher level understanding of what the American mission is. He has references throughout the speech that tells you which way he wants to go and how he thinks that's consistent there. But it is unusual for a speech to be this detailed. And in some senses, it strikes me as more of an extension of the campaign.
So what do you make out of the fact that the speech was of this style and not of the more traditional inaugural style?
That's the really important question. I mean, as one of the things that's important for historians of public discourse to study over time is what we learn about the answer to that question through the archive. So I say that because one obvious place to go would be, well, if somebody deviates from the expected form of an inaugural address as much as Trump did, that could have been a conscious choice, right? I mean, obviously, part of his campaign slogan the whole time has been that he would be different, that he's not like other politicians. The whole drain the swamp motif gets us there in a different way. And so it's possible that his team looked at the records and looked at the tradition in the broadest rhetorical sense and said, you know what, this is where it starts. This is where we signal that this is going to be a different kind of presidency. It's also possible that they made a decision for other reasons to make the changes that they did. And we just won't know that until we have the opportunity many years from now to look through the archival data.
Which inaugural address have you studied over the centuries that most resembled what President Trump delivered on Friday?
I have to say, I don't think there's any inaugural address from the past that really resembles this one. I've heard a lot of people make comparisons to two. So I've heard a lot of people compare Trump to Reagan, and I think that comparison might be fair in the broad sense, but it's not fair in terms of the inaugural address, because Reagan talked in more philosophical terms about what he saw as the American purpose and a restoration of a particular kind of value set to the American people and within the American public sphere. And Reagan also did a lot of more extended discussions of how his plans would impact individual people. And Trump has those notes, but it's like there's a note and then he moves to something else. Reagan was great at storytelling and extended stories about what, you know, sometimes even individual Americans that he would pull out, less so in his inaugural, but in other parts of his speech.
Trump made no positive mention of his predecessor during his speech. And even President Reagan in his inaugural in 1981 did that. Let's listen.
By your gracious cooperation in the transition process, you have shown a watching world that we are a united people, pledged to maintaining a political system which guarantees individual liberty to a greater degree than any other. And I thank you and your people for all your help in maintaining the continuity which is the bulwark of our republic.
Not only with President Reagan, but I think it's traditional for transition presidents from one party to another to at least acknowledge some of the work that his predecessor has done. Trump had previously said some nice things about his predecessor, former President Obama, right after the election. Why do you think he chose not to say anything positive about him in this speech?
I can't answer that question, but I do think it's the right question, because I can't tell you what his intent was, but I do think it's the right question to ask, because if you take precisely the excerpt that you just gave us from Reagan and contrast it with what Trump did, which is to say, quote, every 4 years we gather on these steps to carry out the orderly and peaceful transfer of power, and we are grateful to President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama for their gracious aid throughout this transition. They have been magnificent. Trump's iteration of the thankfulness and the gratitude towards his predecessor almost sounds like because they were helpful with measuring the drapes, right? The transition team. Whereas the part from Reagan that you just invited us to listen to gives you a sense that what Reagan's doing there is demonstrating that the world is listening and the world needs to be reassured that it's a peaceful transfer of power.
Trump seemed to carry forward many of the themes he established during the campaign, including his iconic Make America Great Again slogan, which finished off the speech. And he spelled out in clear detail current problems he sees, like when he criticized the current education system, which led to these comments about criminal justice.
And the crime, and the gangs, and the drugs that have stolen too many lives and robbed our country of so much unrealized potential. This American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
Were you surprised to hear a phrase like American carnage in an inauguration speech? Again, he gave no details about how he's going to shift the American carnage, but he brought it up.
Yes, I was surprised to hear that. The only analog that we could easily compare that kind of a reference to, I've never heard the phrase American carnage, so I can't say that, but that kind of a reference to a specific problem set would either be Barack Obama's 2008 inaugural address when he made reference to how bleak the economic situation was with the global financial crisis. And then quite similarly, and not as a surprise, FDR's first inaugural also has extended mention of the problems that the United States faced at the time. Those two are outliers because typically inaugural addresses assume that the problems have already been defined during the campaign, and the reason the newly elected president won is because enough people agreed with him that that's the agenda, those problems exist. And then the inaugural becomes the first moment typically when presidents don't talk about the problems, they talk about the solutions, and again, at a pretty high philosophical level.
I know there's the benefit of history when you look back on many of these other inaugurals. You don't really have that case with Trump, only a matter of a few days. But what phrases or sections of this speech do you think will be remembered, if any, with some of these more historic inaugural addresses?
Well, I think you've already named one of them. I think the American carnage piece has already drawn a lot of attention. Some of it is not necessarily what perhaps the Trump administration would have sought with that phrase, but it's gotten negative attention from a lot of quarters, not just from ideological critics. And then I think the other thing, quite similarly, that we've already heard a lot of discussion about is his choice to use the phrase America First, which has, to put it probably pretty mildly, a checkered past in the United States.
I know you have, again, the benefit of what happens in an administration following an inaugural address and every other inaugural address that's occurred except for Trump. So is it fair to start shaping this speech without a four-year period of action that follows it?
That's a great question, and the question of what's fair is really important to those of us who study this discourse. I mean, look, one thing is true for every new administration. Nobody understands this job until the minute they've taken it. It's impossible to understand, and every presidential historian agrees on that. In some senses, it's you know, easier to say an incumbent, newly elected president has a leg up there, but when you're giving your first inaugural address, you're stepping into something that you don't understand, which is, in fact, why the traditions, the rhetorical patterns really matter, because you're demonstrating that at least you understand that. So whether or not we can speak, whether this speech gives significance or even any kind of insight into the kind of president Trump is going to be, I'm going to say that it's a little bit early to say that. I think it would be unfair to go all the way. But I will also say the flip side of that comment is it does, again, lined up and with the benefit of history against all other inaugurals, it sounds enough like a campaign speech that I think that's the thing many of us are going to be looking for. When is he going to shift from campaign discourse to presidential discourse? And we have really good data that there's a difference.
Having studied all of these inaugurals over the years, what are the most iconic phrases delivered in an inaugural speech? I think of from my elementary education, speak softly and carry a big stick, mm-hmm. Ask not what your country can do for you, things like that. Are those the ones that resonate with most people?
Yeah, and I think you just, the JFK, I mean, there's just nobody that even comes close in that. Now, this tonight, because I love the early days of the Republic, I'll be talking about some quotes from Washington's first inaugural address, and I'll also be quoting Thomas Jefferson in his 1801 inaugural address. And actually, that 1801 inaugural address gives us some really beautiful sound bites, but also a great parallel, because that was the most contentious election in U.S. history up till that point. And I don't want to give away what I'm going to talk about tonight, but Jefferson goes to great lengths to basically say a version of what we would hear subsequent politicians say, right? We're not Republicans. We're not Democrats. That's not what the parties were called back then. But we're all Americans now. Reagan, again, was very good with that message. But having that message to acknowledge that we've come out of a contentious campaign where there's a lot of uncertainty and division and anxiety, and just literally using the phrasing, we are all Americans now. Today we are united. I think that because that's the presumption behind JFK's line, ask not, and that beautiful construction, I think that also gives us a way of hearing that you don't have to say the words we're all Americans without having that presumption really forcefully define the moment for the new president.
Vanessa Beasley has spent the last 30 years studying American inaugural addresses. She's an associate professor and dean at Vanderbilt University. Thanks for joining us during Sound Ideas today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Willis Kern.